Hello and welcome to Roots from LNER. I'm Clara Amfo. Now, every episode, we'll journey through my special guest travel stories, exploring the destinations and experiences that have shaped them. Today on the show, Ariel Free.
People in London, I do love yous, but you love having a chat and a gig. As a DJ, you never know whether people chatting is like a good thing or not. And I go in with the sole purpose of making people want to dance. People assume, being Scottish, by the way, that I know how to ski. Not a thing. You do a lot of ski festivals in the winters at DJ, and everyone's like, oh, you must ski. Why must I ski? I grew up in Glasgow. It was people telling me that I wasn't good enough as a DJ that really spurred me on, because I love proving people wrong.
Get credit when you join LNER Perks. Visit lner.co.uk/perks. Today on the show, I am joined by an international DJ and producer, broadcaster and host of Party Starters podcast. It is my dear pal, the luminous Ariel Free.
Hello, friend. How are you?
This is wonderful.
That's an introduction and a half. Babe, you made me sound 10 times better than I actually am.
Listen, I speak only the facts. You are luminous, are you not? You are a DJ, are you not?
Yes.
Broadcaster,
yeah.
Producer.
Yeah.
Baby, you do it all. Ariel, we're going to go on a journey,
yeah.
Literally today.
It actually feels like we're on a train together.
Exactly. Yeah. You can hear it. So please make yourself comfy and welcome to Roots. So we are off to Bonnie, Scotland, because obviously. Now, Ariel, when you step on a train and you know you're going back to the homeland, how does it make you feel?
The thing about trains, which I love, is before I've even got on the train, is when you get to stations. So usually I can either do like King's Cross or Euston. And I've had various like adventures in those stations before I've stepped on the train. But my favourite thing is just before I get on the train to Scotland is I always hear a Scottish accent or I hear a Scottish voice. And there's that instant kind of like calmness or like contentment or excitement, because I do get really homesick actually when I go home. I've just been in Scotland recently. I was in Edinburgh, which I'm not from. I'm from Glasgow. And even though people think there's like a real divide there, there isn't. It's like an old school kind of like rivalry there. There's just that instant calmness of when I hear a Scottish accent, because I do love it. I'm very proud to be Scottish. We do have the bands. Like, anyone will chat to you. I do miss that kind of just having conversation with strangers. And there'll always be someone that, like, even if you're like carting your bag on screen, oh, do you need a hand? Or someone just strikes up conversation. It always happens even before you've got on the train. So there's that instant recognition of like, oh, I'm going home. And then there's also like an instant knowledge of like calmness. Cause about 4 to 5 hours the train to Scotland from London, where I live. And I know that I'm gonna have either 4 hours of like getting through my work or like getting through a nice box set. But then also I quite like that people can't really get in touch with me for that length of time, because I can get on with like music making, so I don't necessarily need to be online with that. I can just use my software and my laptop. So I often do a lot of music making on trains. I often dive into a book, and I often like get to catch up on my favorite podcasts or like, you know, music and mixes and things like that. So the prep is always done before I get on the train.
And that's all boosted just with the knowledge that, yeah, you're gonna be home in a matter of hours. I love what you say about hearing an accent before you step on the train making you feel good, because I'm literally just imagining you with your backpack or your gear then just hearing someone like,
I went to college in King's Cross, and I even remember the first train journey I had from Scotland to King's Cross, where I had to audition. I went to a dance school and I had to audition to try and get into the college and get a scholarship, because I couldn't afford to go if I couldn't get a scholarship. And I went with my auntie. She was she's a twin with my grandma, so she came with me. And even just that journey of like getting to London. And I remember the first accent I heard when I got to London was a Scottish guy going, any spare change? And I was like, am I still in Glasgow? And then got chatting to this guy who was like, he was selling the big issue and whatnot. And then I went to do my audition and I came back and he was still at the station. He was like, did you get it? And I was like, I think so, I don't know. And then my auntie losing the train tickets, which they're kind of on it. Like, if you don't have that train ticket, you're going to have to buy another one. And we hadn't realized until we got on the train back, and we're obviously so excited because I knew I was going to move to London. I was like, this is part of like my dream. Like, I wanted to I've always wanted to like move to London, Light of Scotland, and get to like the big bright lights of the city. Do you know what I mean?
Big dreamer.
Yeah. And then I just remember my auntie trying to like flirt with the train, like the train conductor, trying to like just let him get this train back to Scotland because we wanted to tell my family that I'd got a place in this college. I can't remember what was the outcome in the end, but it was just this whole big drama of like the excitement coming down the nerves, doing the audition, being there, because you had to like a physio thing and like they need to make sure you're like fit for purpose, like for all the training and whatnot. And then having the excitement of going back and being able to tell my family that I was finally going to get to move to London. Mm. So I've got a real strong, I mean, there's so many memories along the years, all the kind of Christmas journeys where you kind of got your elbows out to try and fight to get a seat and get your bags on.
It's like the Hunger Games, isn't it?
Oh my God. Yeah. Like I'm quite lucky now because like we split, my mum's in Spain now. So we split Christmas either in Scotland or Spain or my family in Chesterfield as well. And so there's like, I've now got it like on lock of like getting the ticket for the right day, the right time without having to like fight everyone. Like don't travel on a Sunday before Christmas.
Absolutely not.
It's just not going to happen.
Rookie error.
And like, also it's just like, you've got parcels and presents and that. So you do need a little bit more of the bag space. And like everyone has their luggage for like being home for the whole time, like Christmas, like break. So I've got it on lock now, the traveling like situation when it get like around that period.
She's a pro.
Yeah.
So today, I mean, I love when you said, yeah, and your eyes were a bit like, am I?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I am actually, I think I'm a pro in all travel situations, like even planes now. Like I have this, I discovered this thing this year and I honestly can't stop telling people about it. It's a neck brace and not a neck pillow. So you know, when you go on a plane, everyone has a neck pillow and it has like a kind of bumpy kind of donut, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And I've always found them so uncomfortable because it sticks my neck out forward because like the bump at the back doesn't let you just like lie flat against the headrest. So it was actually George's mum, my partner. She had this thing and it looks like she'd just been in a car accident, basically. She hadn't. And it's like a ledge. So it wraps around. It's like a piece. It's like it's a company. I can't remember. They're called Turtle something. And you wrap it around. And it's like a neck brace. And you position it around. The first time I used this was on my flight to Australia and I was doing my first gigs out there. I slept for 10 hours in the first flight and then I slept for 6 hours in the next flight. There is something completely magical about this neck brace, but it's like that, my AirPods, because I put the noise cancellation on. I don't necessarily listen to stuff to fall asleep to, but I've got that, my eye mask and my neck brace, and I am in sleeping heaven.
You are prepped and ready.
Yeah, and I love sleeping on planes and trains because no one can disturb me. So it's like my body goes, great. I can like, I don't have to worry about emails and like when I'm just like, you guys can't get in touch with me. This is wonderful. Anyone who signs onto Wi-Fi on a plane, don't get it.
Yeah.
No, not needed. Take the time out. Enjoy the rest.
There is something so like, it almost feels childlike. Like literally I find like, especially on a long train journey, I feel like I'm literally back in utero. Like I'm in the womb. If I lean my head against the window and just stare for a bit and just that feeling of being like rocked slightly.
Yeah.
It's so therapeutic, isn't it?
There's the journey to Scotland actually. You can either do the West Coast, the East Coast. I can't remember which one it is, but there's one that goes through like the Pennines. And I remember getting that up at winter once and it was like dead stormy and it was kind of rocking more the train, but there was something quite romantic about it. I thought I was like in a Jane Austen like
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, yeah,
I was
yeah.
watching all like the kind of mountain landscape and like you like the Lake District and whatnot, and then it was just like shaking in the wind and the rain. It was
so educate
romantic.
Me actually quickly Scottish geography, because when we did Radio 1's Big Weekend in Dundee, I got the train up there and the route was beautiful. So is that the route?
I think that's the Trans-Pennine one. Yeah.
Yeah,
so you go through, I get confused with the Lake District. We don't get English geography in Scottish schools, okay? So I can tell you anywhere in Scotland, but I can't tell you anywhere in England.
Do you know what? Fair dues. And I can tell you, I think most places in England and not a lot of places in Scotland, which is why you're here,
yeah,
babe. So we're going on a journey.
That journey is stunning. Yeah. You go through just this incredible landscape. Mm. And yeah, you do feel like you're in some sort of like, I don't know, yeah.
Like a cocoon.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Now today, we're on our way to Stonehaven.
Yes.
Can you tell me about your relationship with that place?
So actually, funnily you mentioned Dundee, we did a big ticket giveaway in Scotland for the big weekend at Radio 1. We had been to Dundee, I think like 14 years before, and we wanted to really educate people on like places that you can go to in Scotland and like places that maybe you don't necessarily hear about on the radio. I mean, there was an 8-year gap between Edith Bowman and I joining Radio 1. So there was 8 years of no Scottish voice on the station. Mm. And she's, you know, I think she's from Fife and I'm Glasgow. So there's all these other parts that we haven't ever talked about in the radio. So Stonehaven is famous for being the origin of where the deep fried Mars bar was created.
Okay.
So we went to the fish and chip shop, me and Greg James, and we wanted to taste this deep fried Mars bar. It is amazing. It's like a banana fritter, but with chocolate. So the chocolate melts, but then you've obviously got the batter in it. I mean, obviously not healthy and great for the waistline. However, delicious.
A treat's a treat, babe.
Yeah. So there's a fish and chip shop there. I think it's called the Karen, and it's on the coast. And I just didn't realize, like, we had beaches like that in Scotland. There is like white sand. Like it could have been the Caribbean. Like if, you know, it was a beautiful sunny day. Well, the first day it was, we went there and then we revisited and it was very stormy. And again, someone was surfing when we went and it was really stormy. And I was quite concerned for this guy. Like he was in full like wetsuit, but he seemed to be quite happy.
Just at one with
being
nature.
Tumbling around in these like quite violent waves. But it's so beautiful. And there's like a little fishing village. And you obviously, you've got a chip shop. And actually, I remember this chip shop saying in lockdown, they provided meals for families for the kids who were off school. And like they couldn't, like, you know, people weren't working and whatnot. So they would do like an hour of free like meals for the kids in the area.
That's incredible.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
But it was just a whole new place I'd never discovered. There's lots like of different landscape in Scotland. The Highlands are obviously incredible, like unbelievable to see, like in terms of the scale and what you can get up like towards Inverness and Aberdeen way. And then there's an amazing train journey from Fort William, which is actually the train that you see in Harry Potter.
Okay.
So it's an old steam train. It's not necessarily one you would get for the commute, let's say, but you go for like a tour. My friend did it for her 30th birthday. So there was a group of like 25 of us. And we got on the train at Fort William. You get the steam train and it goes over the viaduct that you see in the Harry Potter movies, the train to Hogwarts. And it is the big steam coming out. And you see actually everyone at the bottom of the viaduct taking pictures of the steam train because they're like their Harry Potter moment. And then you get to a place called Malaig. And again, they have an amazing fish and chip shop. And they have, you know, have your fish and chips with either your tartar sauce or the special sauce, and the special sauce is Buckfast mixed with creme fraiche and caramelized onion, which sounds disgusting on paper, actually like delicious, a taste sensation.
Well, okay, so for people that don't know, because I only learned what Buckfast was through having dear Scottish friends.
It's not something you drink at a nice dinner party.
Exactly. And like DJing in Scotland and just like, actually, I think the very first time I went to Glasgow was Radio 1's Big Weekend. It was my very first one in like 2014, 2015.
It was 14, yeah, yeah.
And it was sensation. Remember, it was like Pharrell, Ed Sheeran. Like
Calvin headlined, I think, in the square.
Coldplay,
like, Clyro.
It was a phenomenal Big Weekend. And everyone's like, oh yeah, you got to try I was going to do the accent, but actually, let me not insult your people. Like, you got to try. Is that something?
That's good.
You got to try the local drink, pal.
Yeah, they always say pal.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh yeah, it's called Buckfast. And they say, and then the rhyme goes, Buckfast gets you.
Well, yeah. So we call it round the house loose juice. So the reason people drink it, it's actually made by monks in Devon. It's in a Devon Abbey that's made by, like, makes it.
So it's made by men of God.
Yes. And it's a fortified, like, wine. I'm going to get this completely wrong. I obviously grew up in Glasgow. It is a drink that people drink to get drunk very fast, and it's very cheap. So you could get it for like £2 for a wee small bottle or like £8 for your big bottle. And I had managed to avoid it as a teenager and growing up in Scotland. I moved down to London when I was 18. My brother liked it because it's got loads of caffeine. Apparently it's got the equivalent of 8 cups of coffee worth of caffeine in it. So it makes you like hyper as well as quite.
And that's when at gigs in Scotland, you hear the famous chant, here we,
yes,
here we,
yeah,
here we, Ingo.
Yeah. So lots of DJs did like it. And it's just one of those things when you're young and you're like, you want something cheap, like it's either that or your Lamborghini or, you know.
Yeah.
But I do remember taking, I think it was my first boyfriend in London back to Scotland. And my brother was going to take us on a night out around Glasgow, which is the best night out ever. I'm not just saying that because I'm from Glasgow.
No, I agree.
Such a good night out in
Glasgow.
Good
times there.
And I can't remember. It was around Halloween because someone was in a caveman outfit. I remember that. And I came out and my boyfriend at the time had just been like, oh, I've just tried some Buckfast. Your brother just gave me some. And I looked at my brother and I gave him this like death stare. And I was like, why did you just do that? And we went to the club and my boyfriend didn't get in. He like, because he was so drunk from just a couple of sips of it. It's that strong. So yeah, I would avoid it, but it's no, but actually in a creme fraiche and caramelized onion sauce, it's delicious with your fish and chips.
I mean, my mind is kind of blown, but I will give it a go.
I was like, this can't be right. But the guy was taking it really seriously, like the chef in the chip shop. And then we all tried it and it was delicious.
But look, once upon a time, somebody thought a deep fried Mars bar was going to work. And now it is a national delicacy.
Do you know what someone told me during the Edinburgh Fringe, like, all the fish and chip shops in Edinburgh like change their prices for the tourists. And I don't know if this is true because you can get a deep fried Mars bar for like £2. £1, let's say, in your chippy. But when it's like the Edinburgh Fringe, because obviously it's so busy, it goes up to like £7. I'm like, well, do you know what?
Do you know what?
You would, wouldn't you?
Exactly. Pouring money into local business. I'm not mad at it. Support local business.
It's like all the hotels that like suddenly cancelled the bookings when Oasis decided they were going to do about 7 dates in Heaton Park, and they suddenly cancelled all the bookings.
So cheeky.
And then put the prices up at like threefold. I'm like, well.
Drinking aside, Ariel.
Yes.
Let's take it back to you as a little kid, your first travelling adventures. Do you remember the first time like you left Scotland, like as a kid, like with your mum, your fabulous mum?
Yeah, I mean, that journey of going to that dance school was with my auntie. I call her my auntie, but it's my great aunt technically. She's my grandma's twin sister. And I remember the train journey of actually when I then had to move to London. And like, oh God, it's going to make me tear up. It was like, my mum and I are very, very close. We're like best pals. And I'd always like, I hadn't really recognised until that moment of moving. Like I've always been quite independent, quite brave. You know, I moved to London, I think I just turned 18. Mm. Which now when I look back on, like, that is young to go to a huge city.
On your ones.
Yeah. And but I just had this kind of confidence of like, that's where my path was and that's where I wanted to be. But I do remember this moment of like my mum coming to London, helping me like unpack my bag. And then that moment of her having to get back on the train back and just being like, oh, I'm actually like, leaving my mom, like, this is such a big thing. And then there was a really horrible moment because it was like a month or so after me being in London, and my grandma passed away, who I was also really close with, and I was the only member of my family that hadn't got to say goodbye to her because I wasn't in Scotland. And I remember making that journey back to go and be with my family at that time and just like thinking, I don't know if actually I want to be in London. I didn't actually realize at that point how lonely I had been or how many friends I hadn't made friends in London yet. I was kind of just going to my dance classes, training, getting home. And the training would go on until like 7, 8, 9 at night. So actually you get home, you get showered, you get your tea and you go to bed and then you get back to it again. But I never felt lonely at that point, but it was that moment of change where I'd lost such an important member in my family. And also being so far away from my family, being like, oh, but knowing, again, we're like talking about train journeys and knowing like they are only a train ride away or like a plane journey away as well. But I mean, journeys as kids, we were very much like holidays in England. Like it was like your Pontins or like your Torquay. My mum's from Liverpool, so I'd always go down to Liverpool quite a lot. There's lots of car journeys fighting with my brother because there's only 11 months between me and my brother. Which some people call Irish twins.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of fighting in the back of the car with him. I do remember getting lost in a Pontins in like Somerset or something in a family holiday because I was so enthralled by like an arcade. So I'd never seen arcade games before. I'd never seen that. But I finally got found and it was all fine. But yeah, I mean, I remember like our bougiest holiday was going to Benidorm. And that was like a big thing, like getting on a flight to a different country. And just like experiencing all these new things, like walking on sand and bare feet and realizing actually the sand can burn the soles of your feet. And like my mum was like, make sure you keep your flip-flops on. And obviously didn't listen to her. And the next thing I'm like hot-footing it back, screaming, trying to get water like poured over my feet. So there were always like, you know, no matter how big or small, like the journeys were, they always were such a huge adventure. So that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. And it's really lovely talking to you and hearing you speak about Spain, because I guess it was almost fortuitous, wasn't it? Like, who knew that you'd be going back to that neck of the woods constantly?
Yeah,
for your career in
the
future.
Actually, like, I'm looking, George and I are looking to move to Spain permanently because our work is so based in Ibiza and my mum's there. And also, I just don't like the cold anymore. I've got to a point where
I'm a Scottish person.
No, but this is the thing, because everyone goes, you should be used to it. But actually, I am used to it and I don't need any more of it in my life.
You've had your fill.
Like, I've literally had my fill. Yeah. It's also like people assume, being Scottish, by the way, that I know how to ski. Like, this is not a thing. So I've been doing a lot of ski festivals in the winter as a DJ. And everyone's like, oh, you must ski. And I'm like, why must I ski? I grew up in Glasgow. We do not have ski slopes in Glasgow. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We do have Aviemore, which is gorgeous. And my brother got into snowboarding in school. But I think maybe because I was at dance school from basically full time from like high school onwards, we actually had to sign a waiver to say we couldn't do like extreme sports, things like that. And I think maybe skiing was included in that. But yeah, people just assume that we like the cold. I do not like the cold.
Okay, so
I like sun. I like sun. I like waves. We're very lucky to have a wee place in Ibiza. My favorite thing is like my routine of actually when I've got not just 24 hours there and running to the next gig, it's like getting up, walking along the beach and going to my reformer Pilates class, getting my little like shake after, and then walking back. And then actually I stand on the beach. Just, I don't know if it sounds a bit like hippy dippy, but grinding yourself in sand and having like 20 minutes where I'm just like listening to something in my headphones, but my feet firmly in like the sand or like the water on my toes. And there's something so therapeutic about having that moment. I don't know. There's meant to be like energy that comes up through
I feel that. And I guess also, with what you do for a living, there is so much, and I say this in a positive way, there's so much chaos.
Yeah.
In just club culture.
Yeah.
And DJing and just, there's so much noise. To have 20 yeah. minutes by yourself when you travel, whether you're going, you know, staying, going somewhere locally or going to Spain, just to be by yourself and literally feel the ground and feel connected. Yeah.
It's that moment of peace. There's so much noise.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not just like, music, it's the traveling, it's, you know, finding, because I go to a lot of, I don't have a tour manager and whatnot with me, like I travel a lot on my own and I actually really enjoy it. I do have a lot of friends who are really lovely and come on trips with me. I've just been to Brazil and my good friend Holly, who you know,
shout out Holly.
Yeah, she came with me as like my TM, but actually just as my friend to experience the adventure of touring in South America for the first time. But I love having a moment of being mute. I'm not, because we have to talk all the time. Mm-hmm.
And even we as broadcasters, dear listener, can sometimes get sick of the sound of our own
voices. Oh my goodness. Like I got back from Brazil and I had to go into like 3 hours of pre-records of radio. And then I had to cover Jack because he was not there for his show, which was before my show. I did 7 hours of talking. I was so sick of my voice by the end of it. And then I had to come in the next morning and do some more pre-records before I did a gig and went to Amsterdam. So it is constant. So just having that moment of being mute and not having conversation or being on and just like being like, this is lovely. I'm looking at water and sun and having my feet in the sand. And not even just that, like that's why I think I love train journeys and plane journeys, because I can be silent. You know, and I'll always pick up a conversation with someone, I'm sure. But just having those moments of being like resting my voice in my head.
Yeah, just being with you.
Yeah.
Did you always think that travel was going to be part of your, I guess, part of your future? I mean, you mentioned you were a big dreamer. You knew you were going to move to London, but did you always have a sort of global, I guess, goal or yeah. like, I guess, dream about your future?
I love traveling. Like, I remember when I finished college, I had to defer for a year because I got a job and then I went back and I was working as a dancer when I was still in college. And by the time I'd finished my actual degree, which no one's ever asked me about, yes, I got a degree. Thank you very much.
Love but, that. Give us the full title.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Well, it's a degree in performance art and dance. It was through my dance college, but my mum was like, you can go to dance college, but you have to get some sort of kind of, you know, not accreditation, but like some sort of thing on paper to say, should it not work out, you have a degree, a diploma or whatnot. Although no one's ever asked me what I got in my degree, but I think I got a 2-1. But yeah, and I love traveling. So the minute I finished my degree and I'd done all this and I was confused because I really wanted to be in music, but I couldn't sing. I couldn't play an instrument, but I talked about music all the time and I'd always wanted to be in radio, but I couldn't afford to go back to like another college or do a course in that sense. So I took 3 months out and I went traveling. First of all, I went interrailing, which is amazing. Because I think I went to like 22 stops in a month. And that was like so eye-opening because I got to see so much of Europe, like started. And the interrailing tickets, by the way, were so reasonable. So I think I started in Amsterdam and then went to, I skipped Berlin which I really regret because I've still not been to Berlin and I really want to go, but it was either get off a train at 4 a.m. in Berlin or go on to Prague and like get there like 10 a.m. in the morning. And when you've got like your backpack and I'm like, just allow me to get into my hostel at like 11, 12 rather than 4 a.m. in the morning. But yeah, like I saw Prague, Slovenia, Budapest. There's so many places all around Italy. And you can also get on a ferry with that Interrail pass. Went all around these places. And we had a little tent with us as well. And I remember one time we wanted to get the train that goes from Milan all the way up through the Alps and then down into Barcelona. But we didn't realize there was like a 6-month booking that you had to do on it. So we ended up getting this coastal train from, I'm going to get it wrong, maybe it was Rome. And we went all along the Italian coast. And then it went through into Monaco and then through into France and all around the Spanish coast. But we had to stop off and stay over somewhere. We just found this campsite in like the border of Italy and France. It was stunning. And you just get to see so much. And then when I got to Barcelona, I met my mum and went and stayed with her because she's lived in Spain for the best part of 17 years now. So that was like my first big adventure. And then we did 3 months traveling around Southeast Asia. And even when I was there, we saw these tickets to like fly to Japan, and you could get, and there's a thing called a Japanese rail card. I don't know if you've done it.
I've only been on the bullet train in Japan, which I absolutely loved.
So this yeah. rail card that they do, you can only buy it. I don't know if it's the same rules because this is going back years ago, but you could buy this Japanese rail card and it's just for tourists, and you can get on any bullet train, bus, ferry, tram around the whole of Japan for a week. And it was like 150 quid for a week, which at the time, like a bullet train was 80 pounds for one journey. So we were like, let's go to Japan. So we went for a week and I've got to see like everywhere. And Japan still to this day is one of the best places I've ever visited.
Oh, it's incredible.
And I really want to go back and see it and experience that. So yeah, I've always loved adventure and I've always loved travel. And then people are like, why, you know, you can't just do Australia for a week. And I'm like, why can't I just do Australia for a week? Because such an adventure. I only went to South America for 10 days. And we really fit it in. We started in Buenos Aires and then we went to Rio and then on to Sao Paulo. And then we managed like to go to this beautiful little island that's like 2.5 hours from Sao Paulo after my gig and then come back. Because in the run up to a gig, there's always like the nerves, like anxiousness, like getting it wrong, especially touring and playing in a new country for the first time. So the minute my gig had finished, it was like suddenly I could relax. And then I was like, okay, now we can actually go and just enjoy being restful and enjoy the adventure.
And be tourists.
Yeah. So yeah, I've always loved adventure and I've been really lucky. I've gone to so many amazing places, especially with my DJing. Like I've DJed in Mexico and actually touring the States more and more is one of my big goals that I want to continue at, because I just love American crowds. They're so invested in anything you play, and also their energy is wild. Yeah. They remind me of Scottish crowds. Like they let you know that they are loving the music, which is so wonderful to experience.
Yeah, because it's funny. I think, like, don't get me wrong, like British people, like we love to have it, but then I think region by region also,
yeah,
it's very, very different.
Oh yeah.
Like I will put my hands on heart and say, like a London crowd.
Yeah.
You've got to really work.
Oh, tell me about it.
To win over.
Yeah, that's it. And also like people in London, I do love yous, but you love having a chat in a gig. Do you know what I mean? Like as a DJ, you never know whether people chatting is like a good thing or not. And I go in with the sole purpose of making people want to dance. And if I can see someone put their phone down and just lose it for an hour, then I know I've done my job well.
Well, you flipping can't stay still when you DJ.
No, I know.
No, but which I love. I love watching you flip because you, I mean, look, your name does what it says in tin. You are free behind those decks. Like you really like lose yourself in your process. Yeah. But you do.
I just love the music that I play.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the first gig I played in Brazil, and I'm talking about it because it was very recent.
Mm.
Brazil for me is such a hub of music. Like, it's the birthplace of samba. It's so ingrained.
Like, Riley Funk, all
in
that,
this,
yeah.
Yeah, in this melting pot of beats. But it's this Latin infusion that's few music is what I play in my set. So I was so grateful for the opportunity to play that. But also the opportunity was Tomorrowland, Brazil. Tomorrowland's like basically the Glastonbury of the electronic dance world. Mm. They have a huge festival in Belgium in a place called Boom, actually. What an amazing name. And I got to play it in the summer this year. And from that, they asked me to do Brazil. So I wasn't just going to be playing to 50 people. Like the stage could hold 10,000 people. So the anxiety and the nerves, like I nearly vomited as I walked on stage. I was so shaky. And actually, I remember the first few tracks, I was missing. There's a lot to do on the decks. And I'm not someone who's just going to play one track and mix in the other. Like I want to work for it. I want people to know that I'm technically good, because there are a lot of some men out there who still doubt us women as female mm-hmm. DJs. And so I want to prove to them, you almost have to work harder to prove that you deserve that place there. And I remember the first few ones, I was making mistakes because my fingers were slipping. So I was shaking so much. But what I had planned for the set ended up not being what I played anyway, because I could see what they were enjoying and what was the ones that were really connecting with them.
But that is the art of DJing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like obviously, you can come in with your idea of what you want to play, but ultimately, you need to study who's out there
yeah.
and give them what they want.
And they were so engaged. And like, there's a lot of new music that I've made that I wanted to test out. And I was like, maybe this won't work because they won't know it. And then actually, I remember playing one of this. I just made it the week before in the studio. But it had a Cuban sample actually in it, one of my favorite acts, Buena Vista Social Club. And
oh,
nice. Dare I even put like rework what they've made, because they are just incredible. And you always worry that kind of reworking or editing something that's so like celebrated, like people might hate it. But they absolutely lapped it up, and it was so wonderful to experience that. But I don't make music that I'm not going to enjoy. I think that's why you will see me dancing behind the decks. I don't download music that I even question if I might play it or not. It's always an instant kind of connection. And I think that's why people enjoy dancing in a sense, because I enjoy the music that I'm putting out there. And it's not necessarily in a box. It's not, I don't play just one genre. I'll go from Latin house to, you know, a bit more kind of melodic techno or a
Spice bit, Girls remixes.
Spice
which
Girls.
Which I've witnessed myself in Ibiza.
I have the most amazing collection of Spice Girls remixes. I have a techno version. I have, oh my God, I have a carnival version. Oh, it's so good. So like, I just, that's what I love, like collecting, yeah. And I'm so, I love songs of words as well. So you're never going to come to my gig and not hear vocals, because that's what I love. And I think if you don't like that, that's fine. Like, I don't need to win you over. You've got your music that you love. But yeah, if you come to my gigs, you're going to get hopefully a sing-along as well.
Definitely. Like, it, as a mate and just, you know, as a fellow professional, but as more as a friend, it's been so lovely and just so, it's been really heartwarming just to see your career just grow and grow and grow. Like, does it still, I mean, yeah, how are you computing people really getting to know you on a global level now? Because I remember when you first started getting into sort of like DJing and really taking it seriously, as well as like doing telly, as well as doing radio, like you really like buckling down and like, you know, you were doing like playing gigs in London and stuff, and then it's gotten bigger and bigger. And now you're like really like fully international. Does it freak you out that people know who you are?
It's quite funny that you mentioned all that stuff from like the beginning, because I started DJing in 2012, but I was very much an indie Cindy. Like, I was indie bangers till I die. And then it was in 2015, I got a job at Ministry of Sound Radio. And I was like, well, if I'm going to be a drive time host on a global dance brand radio station, I need to know how to properly DJ. And they were so good because there was decks in the studio. So I really like knuckled down then. And I was really lucky because my brother was always the big dance fan. I loved New Rave. I was like, I loved New Rave, Hadouken and Daft Punk.
Klaxons.
I took Klaxons 7 times in 1 year. That diehard a fan. But it was actually, it was people telling me that I wasn't good enough as a DJ that really spurred me on, because I love proving people wrong. I love, if you tell me no, I'm going to prove you wrong. And I was told that I wasn't good enough to be a dance DJ on the radio, basically. And I was like,
you don't have to name any names. Who told you that? What type of person told you that?
Just various people just didn't think that I was a credible enough DJ to warrant giving me a dance show on a radio station, even though I come from Ministry of Sound and whatnot. And I was like, fine. Well, I was already gigging at that point. And I was like, well, that's fine. That's their, you know, that's their outlook. And there are a lot of clubs, I will say, who still won't book me. Like, I'm not considered a cool kid. And I remember for years I was trying to be one of the cool kids. And it was the minute that I went, I'm not a cool kid. I want to play bangers that people want to like lose their mind to and maybe recognize. And not accessible. Accessible dance music is what we play in the radio, but like music that they are going to connect with, that I love, that I, like I say, vocal led. And the minute I realized I wasn't one of the cool kids is the minute things started working out for me in terms of gigs, like knowing my lane. But I don't even have a lane. I hate this thing, like you either, are you techno? Are you house? Are you, you know, are you indie? Are you Afro house? Are you Latin house? Like all these like subgenres as well that mix into it. But I think it was the minute I realized I wasn't a cool kid and actually playing songs of words wasn't gonna stop me from getting the gigs. And like back to your question about people recognizing me, I think it blows my mind that I can bring people that much joy, because that's what it's always been about. Whether it's been on the radio, on your telly, or you know, behind the decks, having that ability to let people escape for an hour or 2 hours, or just really live in the moment and not be on their phones and not worry about life's, you know, woes and what's going on around. It is such a beautiful thing to be able to do. And I did a gig recently in Edinburgh that wasn't the hugely busiest like gig ever. You know, I'd just come from playing to 10,000 people to a room of 50 people. But those 50 people in that room had the time of their lives. And that's what I love more than anything. I don't get recognized, which I like, because I'm still quite funny about people's recognizing me. I don't know if it is. I remember someone come up to me like, you Ariel Free? And I was like, yeah, why? And one of my friends was like, you really need to get better at that. Like, you sounded like you're about to
what
start.
What you want?
Yeah. I was like, yeah,
who
why?
Told you?
Yeah. And I was like, why? But and my friend was like, you need to get a little bit better at that, because you look like you're about to start a fight with him. But I was just really shocked. But people are very kind. And I mean, I suppose in Scotland, more than anything, people are very, will always shout and say hello, which is lovely because I feel like there's an element of pride there from the Scots.
Well, yeah, you want that hometown glory. And also, like, again, like just this year alone, you've got to work with like two of your famous favourite Scottish people, like Lulu and Calvin. Could it be two further people apart, but also so particularly Scottish.
I mean, Lulu is such an icon. Over the years, people have sent her remixed or edit versions of Shout, and she's not really said yes to anyone. And when I kind of put mine forward and I said, I really would love to rework this. It originally came out in like 1965. She was 15 at the time. And it's such an iconic, celebrated track, not only in Scotland, but globally. I've thought, wonder if they should ever let me rework this. And you know, the record label Decca, who she's, you know, been with for years, put it to her and she said yes instantly. And then she is so fabulous. She's 75. She does like yoga and meditation every day. She has a house, she has a villa in Ibiza.
And of course she does.
I got a message from her manager being like, Lulu really wants to meet you, but it was 2 days after my wedding. And I was like, I'm off, okay? I'm having some time out. But they're like, no, she's still there next week. So if you're back from like, you know, your wedding stuff and whatnot. So I got given her number and I texted her. I was like, hi, nice to be in touch. And she's like, come over and please bring your gorgeous hubby. And so I said to George, I was like, you've got to come with me. Like, I think Lulu wants to meet you. And then we went there and it was like, she had been part of my family for however, she just talked and like, you know, she's worked with like Tina Turner, David Bowie, Chaka Khan, Anastasia. John, like, it's just so many incredible people. And she just told us all these amazing stories of her sneaking out of our villa and in Ibiza and going to the clubs and coming back and like being in bed with her sister before our mum knew they'd even been out raving all night. She's just, and she's such a life liver. And I aspire to be like that at 75. Yeah. Like, come on. And when she came on stage at Glastonbury, by the way, she was bouncing around that stage. Like, the woman has got moves. And she's also just got this amazing, like, on stage. You know, it's the old school entertainment thing, isn't it? So she did the big note in Shout. And then she just, like, finished it. And she nailed that note, by the way. Her voice is still incredible. And she just went, put that in your pipe and smoke it. And then she went, hit it, hit. And then we banged in the remix. And it was just this moment where the uproar, the audience just was like, put that in your pipe and smoke it. The whole place just erupted. Like, it's giving me goosebumps thinking about it. But she was amazing. And then after, she was like, oh, could I have a wee t-shirt for my grandkids and all this? She's so down to earth and unaffected. I know, and she's seen some things and experienced some things. And then apparently she saw Calvin in the street and she like stopped her car and she's like, Calvin, you know my wee pal, Ariel. She's like, we should all do dinner. So she's just so open and friendly and wonderful. And yeah, God bless her. I want to be like her when I'm 75.
That is so, so, so fabulous.
Yeah, she's great. So she's amazing. Fabulous.
Okay, Ariel, I need to talk to you about where particularly you love to DJ and why. So no pressure. Your top three places to DJ in the UK at this point in time. And then we can do the world afterwards, but the UK first.
Manchester. Manchester crowds love music and love all sorts of music. I mean, it's such a, again, melting pot of music there, whether you're into like your indie bands or your electronic music. But Warehouse Project have really nailed it, obviously, with their clubbing season. They really take over the winter. So when we kind of come out of summer madness, it's so nice to know that maybe you've got like a little gig there, because there's three big rooms at Warehouse Project. I think you can hold 10,000 people. I'm so bad with numbers. But I started my first Warehouse Project gig in Archive, which is the smallest room. And it's like this tunnel with a huge arch ceiling. I think it was an old train station.
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
I think it's an old train depot, because the main room is called the depot. Yeah. So I think it's an old train station. And the main room, so I've been really lucky to play all three rooms there. I absolutely love the concourse, which is the second room, because the DJ booth is in the crowd, and then the crowd are in the round around you, and the music is so crystal clear. There's no bouncing. The depot room is amazing, but it's such a huge space to fill. To actually DJ it technically is really hard, because you can hear the sound bouncing around. So you've got to really get your headphones on and know what you're playing and not have like everything bouncing around. The concourse is wild, and I got to do the New Year's Eve bells moment there 1 year and do the actual, yeah, the countdown. And then I played an edit of Jocelyn Brown. It went off that big note. Ah, I can't. It was so special. So Manchester would be my number one. London, would London be my number two? I don't know. And then I'm going to leave out my hometown, I'm sorry, but actually Wales. I picked Cardiff with Fisher, actually, at Cardiff Castle. That audience, that crowd. And anytime I did another festival in Wales in Port Talbot called In It Together, that was amazing. So actually it would be Manchester, London and Wales as a whole nation, because Scotland doesn't get in there because I really struggle with club gigs in Scotland, but they have a very particular taste of music that they like in Scotland that I don't necessarily play. I don't play like kind of hard, faster stuff, which is what they love up there. When I get to do things like Transmit Festival, which is in Glasgow, that's lovely. But yeah, that's probably why Scotland hasn't made the cut there.
You know, I respect that radical honesty.
Yeah.
And you want to spread
yourself?
I mean,
outside the UK, I'd say Brazil is definitely my favorite place I've ever played in my entire life. And New York. New York vibe is the... Oh.
You know how I feel about New
York. Yeah, I just... Oh, my first gig in New York, the security guard came up to me and I was like almost crying. And he was like, that's the best gig I've ever seen in 30 years. And I've been a security guard here for 30 years. And I was like, what? But they just love house music in New York, you know?
That is so...
It's like in their blood, isn't it? So,
so yeah. Brazil, New York.
Oh, yeah. Brazil, New York. And definitely in Ibiza as well, obviously. People go there who love that, you know, who love dance music. Mm. So there's different venues that you have different experiences, but... Yeah, I think New York would be my number one and then Brazil number two.
Let's talk about podcasts. You know, from one podcast coin to another. The second series of Party Starters is in full effect.
Yeah.
You've had some incredible guests. So if people that don't know, it's essentially just talking about like the people's best parties, worst parties, party stories, all of that good
stuff.
Yeah,
and then we actually build your ultimate party.
That's it. So you've had Fat Tony on there, legend, Melanie C from Spice Girls, Camille's been on with you, like so many great people. But I want to know, what is your fantasy party?
Oh my gosh, that's good. Okay, the venue, I know we're talking about Brazil a lot, but I'm going to say, there was this island I went to called Ilhabela. So it's a little island off Sao Paulo. It's like 2.5 hours in a car. So I would do it in Ilhabela in Brazil. And it would definitely be a beach party, and it would start from day and it would go on till dawn. And it would be beach day party vibes in the day, like a bit more kind of underground, more club focused in the evening. There would definitely be dancers, whatever dancers you want, whether it's your Vogas, it's your, you know, your Samba girls, or just people who love moving. And I wouldn't dare say who I'd have on the lineup. I know I would. I'd have absolutely have Honey Dijon headline.
Oh,
because I've just never seen that woman ever do a bad set in her life.
I saw her DJ in Paris last month, and she was excellent.
Any environment, like I did Cannes Lions, which is like the advertising more like at Cannes, and it'd be quite corporate. And she was DJing at this amazing Spotify party Khalees had just performed before. And she came on and like, you could just hear all like kind of more corporate-y people talking. And I was just in the front living it. And like my arms up, and I've met her a few times. And she was just laughing at me because I was just screaming. That woman is just the most amazing DJ ever. I love her. So I would just have her play pretty much all day and all night if I could, but I doubt she'd want to do that because she'd be knackered.
Well, it's funny because as you're describing what you want this to be like, I'm just thinking about your wedding. You're basically describing what your wedding was like, but minus
on
the
a
dancers.
Beach. Yeah.
So Ariel got married in Ibiza. Was it the start of this year?
April, yeah.
Oh my God, the year's gone by so quickly. And it was arguably, I mean, obviously I love all my friends who are married, blessings on all your nuptials. Arguably one of the best weddings I've ever been. It was so joyous. It was like a day retreat rave type situation.
You came to the after party, right?
Yeah, I came to the first afters, then I didn't
you
go to the
You came to the pool
after.
Party. Yeah. I mean, I think it says a lot about our friends more than anything, because there were such different groups of people who had never even met each other before. And we did a kind of pre-drinks the night before to kind of break the ice. A lot of people just instantly got on. I think because all of our friends are lovers of music, lovers of joy and conversation, and also lovers of Ibiza. And so getting everyone together on that island, we did it the week before the season opened because we just knew by that point we wouldn't have a lot of our friends be able to come. And it was just... we woke up the next day after the wedding, and we had this amazing venue called Racco, which has been there for 35 years. Not a lot of people know about it, run by this incredibly cool and sexy couple called Regine and Diego.
Of course.
Diego has the best handlebar mustache you've ever seen. He walks around in a suit and a paisley shirt, but bare feet, obviously. And Regine looks like Brigitte Bardot, but wears her dungarees because they're very hands-on. And when we went to see the venue actually for the pool party, which we wanted the day after, they were like, and you know, we have this club. And I was like, excuse me? And they have this hidden club. that you can take over. And it has a chill out area in the front. It has a little ping pong table, has like three bars. And then you just go in and it's like this tiny mini Pikes and it can hold about 100 people. And so after the wedding, we carted everyone in coaches up to the after party and just danced until 4 a.m. in the morning. But yeah, we woke up the next morning and we just looked at each other and was like, we would not change a second of that day. It was just joy from beginning to end and joy and fun. Like everyone just got on. There was no drama. I think one of our family members was sick in a taxi. That was the only drama. That was it. But actually, just it was just...
Your mum was having it.
Of it, mum, Jackie. You know what she's like? She doesn't ever like leave a dance floor. So yeah. I mean, she came to Ibiza this summer and had 5 days there. And I wasn't even there. She got there before I arrived because she wanted to go to Glitterbox. And she was like, I'm not missing Glitterbox this year. And I couldn't arrive till the Monday because I was playing in New York, fully enough. And then I got there and I was like, do you want to go out tonight? She's like, absolutely. And she did like 5 days of solid raving, which even I can't do in Ibiza now. And then she messaged me a month later. She's like, I was thinking about coming out this weekend. And I was like, are you, what? You've had your like your rave. But yeah, she loves it. She loves it. We in my family, like the family parties were always like, you had your wee buffet, you know, and they your finger food that like everyone like could put together. And then the music would just go on and we'd all dance. I remember my friend Lindsay coming to one of my family parties and she was like, this isn't what family parties are like in my family. And I was like, really? It's just, you know, Spice Girls always went on because shout out to my cousin Gail. She took me to my first ever Spice Girls concert when I was younger. So it's just, that's always been our way of life. Mm. Like we, like music always goes on and we always have a dance. So, which I find mad that if that isn't people's routine. I don't know. So I was really, I remember being quite perplexed when Lindsay said that to me. I was like, just that's what I'm always used to.
It's just the freeway, baby.
Yeah.
It's just the freeway. Let me ask you this. Where is next on your hit list to sort of conquer professionally, like in the globe? And also where you just want to go to just for vibes to visit?
I would love to go to South Korea. I'd love to play in Seoul and Japan. I'd love to experience more of America. I got to play in Chicago last year, which was just like the birthplace of house music, obviously. I remember being so nervous, but that was incredible. I would love to tour the States more. I'd love to go to Canada. I would love to go to India. India apparently has amazing house scene there.
It does.
Yeah, and I'd love to just see that and experience that. I did a bit of Australia last year, not as much. I'd like to go back down there and I'd love to go around more of South America. I want to go to Peru. I want to actually play in Argentina. I didn't get to play there. I'd love to play in there. And I'd love to play more places around Brazil, not just in like Rio and Sao Paulo. So yeah, pretty much everywhere.
And on the phone, just everywhere.
Oh, and I'd love to go. I mean, I don't know if my music would work in South Africa, but I would love to go and experience like music in like various parts of South Africa because I know the music scene is so lived and cherished there. And I would just love to experience that.
Mm, like, yeah, Kwaito, which is like basically South African house music, is... love that. It's sensational. So on the flip side, locally, do you do staycations? Like when, if you ever have time, do you and Georgia go anywhere just in the UK just to get away from it all?
Yeah, we like, I mean, we kind of keep it closest to London. Mm. So whether it's like I mean, one of our first dates was Leigh on Sea, which was lovely.
In Essex?
Yeah, because it's the closest beach to London.
Right.
So when we went and we were like, it was kind of coming out of lockdown, you were allowed to go for walks with people. So we had to be outside and I was like, well, where can I go that we can walk? And then, yeah, Leigh on Sea was closest. And that's where my friend Holly is like near as well. So I know that area a bit, but it's stunning. And also I kind of love the Cockney attitude to Leigh on Sea still. Yeah. You know what I mean? You get a bit of like, I think the darts were on in the pub or whatever. And like, you still get that real kind of...
It's very English, very cheeky.
Yeah. And like, again, got people who want to have a chat with you and conversation and you know, a bit of banter. Do you know what I mean? I like you say, the cheekiness of it. But where did we go? The New Forest we went to recently, and that was just gorgeous. And actually, I went to Bath to play, and that train journey is wonderful because when you get on the train on a Friday night, people are having a lot of fun on that train journey. And then when you come back on the Saturday, everyone's going into London for it, like to do a wee like London trip. So it was really nice to experience both that because there was a lot of wine being consumed on the Friday night. And also the trolley that goes on that train is very old school. It feels like you go back in time. It's like quite old, like drinks and food trolley that you come through. And they came through like 1,000 times. I was like, these guys know their market.
Well, let me tell you something, honey. See on the LNER train, there's a little QR code in the back of the seats. So if you scan it, you can literally get your snacks delivered to your chair.
I got a train journey. I can't remember where I was going, but I remember it was like after a gig and I was like, I just need a nice time out. And I was like, yeah, get it delivered. And I was like, there's no way this QR code's going to work, you know, with the train going so fast, signal might be dodgy. And honestly, turned up in like 5 minutes and I had like a wee wine. I think that was like dinner. Like I think it was a bacon roll actually, which makes it sound like breakfast. I wasn't having wine at breakfast.
No judgment. It's a judgment free zone.
The convenience of that, I love it. It's and also, I'm not that it's a competition. The staff in LNER are always the most wonderful, open and welcoming people. Again, people who want to have conversation with you. They'll just sit and have a wee chat with you. It's lovely.
Yeah, do you know what? It is lovely. And do you know what I always really like? You know when you have your ticket ready?
Yeah.
And they're just like, thank you so much. And you're just like, it's okay.
Yeah, it's stress-free. Yeah. I love it. No drama. Here for
all
that.
What about that? As I was speaking about snacks, I was like looking at them and I think I actually want to have one now. What are your preferred snacks when you travel, by the way?
I'm not even just saying this because this is here, but yeah. If you get me on a train to Scotland, shortbread is the first one. I've not seen this one. Lottie Shaw's shortbread.
Doing some ASMR for our listeners now.
Yeah, am I allowed to eat it whilst I chat to you?
Look, God. Imagine, we've just scanned our QR code.
We've had
our snacks delivered to
actually
our...
Actually giving me variations thingy. Of... Which one's a better shortbread? I might have to do a taste test.
Why not?
Reads first. I am a cup of tea and a shortbread girl
right.
on a train. Love it. I actually prefer trains because it's really hard to get decent food at an airport.
Very true.
Yeah. Decent healthy food at an airport. You really struggle. The salads are always dry or else it's just a dry sandwich. Same with service stations. So I quite like it because you definitely get a lot more variety on trains that is a bit healthier.
Because this is the thing also, I think people don't realise, particularly for DJ, because I mean, again, the club culture, the kind of I describe it as beautiful chaos, but you almost have to be like an athlete to keep yourself fit and focused.
Yeah.
Shout out to Peggy Goo. Like Peggy, that one, super healthy, does her Pilates, is doing whatever, wherever she goes. And do you find you're the same?
I've got into a routine now where I'll Google where a reformer Pilates place is where I'm going.
Mm.
So when I went to Chicago, actually, there's a DJ there that I know called Azeka, and I was like, can you tell me a Pilates studio nearby? And she took me to one and it was great. So I'm very like on that, and also going to hotels that have a gym that you, if you can't get to like a class or whatnot. Also, it's quite nice having a reason to go out of your hotel room and go to somewhere locally and try the class. I found an amazing center in Ibiza this summer, which was a total game changer. So yeah, and actually we found one in Argentina, but we couldn't make it work. So we just did loads of tango instead. You get to a point, I don't even drink now when I DJ most times, because just like waking up with a hangover is just so much more of a slog than getting on a plane, dehydrated. You don't need that anyway. So it does, I think it's just an age thing as well. You become a lot more just focused on being good on the road and being looking after yourself and eating better and not drinking like a fish. I mean, so it is a business at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you can't turn up to your business on the party all the time. And obviously you can have your moments where you party and have a lovely time. But yeah, I think the attitude now has definitely changed within the DJ world. Like I remember when I first started asking for a sober rider, like I got to a gig and this guy was like, I know you asked for a sober rider, but we just got you a bottle of vodka instead. And I was like, no, that's not how it works. Whereas now they're like, they've got the juices, they've got your coffees, they've got whatever you have, and it's so much more accepted. And it's also people now ask, do you want a sober rider or an alcohol rider? So it's becoming so much more accepted and so much more encouraged.
That's really, that is really, really positive, because, you know, we've had some really sad losses quite recently. And I think there is still a taboo around addiction within the creative community, particularly like club culture. There's still a lot of elephants in the rooms. And it's just that thing of like, guys, we need to take care of ourselves. Like, don't, no one say you can't have fun, but if you're functioning in addiction, you're functioning in a state where you know it's not healthy for you, whilst trying to do your job to the best of your ability, like, who's this helping?
It's so hard because there are people within, I suppose, all sorts of music industries who just want to party and be the party and be in the party. But obviously that party has to stop eventually, especially if you want to continue doing this for forever. Look at Carl Cox. Like, he came up through that real time where it was about accession and you know,
pure hedonism.
Yeah. And he's been really good at like not ever like diving into that. But it's obviously hard with people's own kind of lives and situations and the people who surround you as well, who can maybe enable that. It takes a lot for someone, one, to admit if they've got a problem or they need to get out, And two, to have the right people around you to support you in that. Mm. I'm really lucky that my partner, George, you know, he's worked in the industry that I do as well, that we're both kind of over that kind of just messy party get. We've got that out of our system. And it is very much a business. But also, if you're a traveling DJ, it's hard enough. It's hard enough, like doing long haul flights and rubbish food and time zones and lack of sleep. So actually, I think people are becoming much more aware, obviously, of the mental health strains it can have, all those things. And also the anxiety that comes of DJing and performing in front of big crowds and then being on your own again. I think there's something to be said about that across a lot of performers in any music. You know, I think Adele's talked about that quite a lot, how lonely she felt when she came off stage for having just performed to like 40,000 people and then coming off and being in a room on her own and being like, whoa. So it's a lot on people's like mental well-being. But I do think there's a lot of attitude and there's a lot more help now. I mean, Fat Tony's amazing. He was on my podcast and he's so good at reaching out to people and he's actually when people are going through like actually going sober,
he's an amazing kind of coach essentially.
He's a mentor for people, and he's also a sponsor for a lot of people, so he's the person that they can phone if they find themselves like wavering and whatnot. He's such a diamond, that man, and I just, he's so good at like, you know, shining a light on like what can be done better like and within the industry. But it is so much more acceptable now to be a sober DJ, which I love. Like, it was very much back in the... And also, it comes from being... Not being such... It's still a boys' club. But it was very much boys together, boys in arms. Let's all go and party and do the thing. And we're the kind of the egos and the rock stars. Whereas now, with a lot more women coming through and a lot more different...
Just different energies, isn't
different
it?
Different energies. Yeah. I think people are being much more accepting of it. And it's great. It's a great movement. And it's I love that people now don't just give you a bottle of vodka when you've asked for a bottle of water.
And I'm truly delighted for you as well, Ariel, truly. Okay, so last question. As we come up to our final destination, it's a big question, slightly vague, but I mean, you can go anywhere with it. Like, what is, I guess, your ultimate, your ultimate DJ, like, travel goal?
I would love to be a DJ that gets to headline the second stage, which can be the dance stage at Coachella Festival. Because I don't think it's been done. I think Peggy headlined. I don't know, maybe she didn't headline, but she played the second main stage. And my goal is to be the headliner, period.
shoot for the flipping stars.
And all there's lots of other things around that. I want to have my own residency in Ibiza because there's still not a female resident headliner. And that's not to say they haven't tried, because there's a lot of people who say, oh my God, it's shocking, it's only male headliners. I know that they have tried. There's lots of offers that have gone out to various female DJs, but actually they don't want to be stuck in Ibiza every week, which is fair enough. But I would love to have my own headline residency in Ibiza. I would love to be the headliner, and I would love to headline the second stage, the main stage, and at Glastonbury. I would like to headline the park stage like Peggy Goo did this year.
Ariel, I fully believe in all of those dreams, and we will see you there.
I'll definitely see you at Glastonbury.
I'll definitely see you there. Thank you so much to the wonderful Ariel Free for joining us today on Roots from LNER. Series 2 of Ariel's podcast, Party Starters, is coming soon, but make sure you check out Series 1 wherever you get your podcasts. And talking of podcasts and where to find them, as always, why not rate and review if you enjoyed this episode of Roots, and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts. Also, look out for Ariel's Quiet Coach episode, which will drop next week. We'll be hearing about her traveling snacks, tracks, and hacks, and what places have inspired and changed her. Until then. Get credit when you join LNER Perks. Visit lner.co.uk/perks. Roots from LNER, a Distorted production.